Hello, it's Friday again, and welcome to the 37th weekly episode, nonstop, of the Zogby Report, Real and Unscripted. As always, I'm John Zogby, pollster, and I'm with my son, Jeremy Zogby, pollster, and we try to take a look at the news of the week, especially as it impacts the future. Obviously, we're in the middle of a presidential race, and so we're going to talk about that as we normally do for a few minutes and then see where the conversation takes us. Jer, how are you doing this week?
I'm doing well, and I have a feeling that the conversation's going to go right back to the 2020 election because that's probably what's on most people's minds right now.
Yeah, it sure is, and I know it's on our minds as well. And so let's jump right into it. You know, on one hand, there's the polls. They don't seem to move all that much. On the other hand, there's the campaign, and that is in full swing and in earnest, and I might add, even beyond in earnest. The name calling has begun, and it's not pretty. So as we look at the polls, the naked eye would say, oh, gee, they're all over the place again, but they're really not. The nationwide polls show a little bit, not much, a little bit of a tightening in the race between Joe Biden, who continues to lead, and Donald Trump. We even have a Rasmussen poll, an outlier, I might add, that has Trump leading 47-46. But the average remains about 6.5 points of a nationwide lead for Biden. And the range is a Biden lead of anywhere from 9 or 10 to mainly 5 or 6. And then, of course, there is the Rasmussen poll that, again, is the outlier. When we go to the states, we see a different story. The naked eye would look at the battleground states of Wisconsin and Pennsylvania and North Carolina and so on, and rightfully conclude that Joe Biden is leading in all the states that he needs to lead, and in fact is opening up a wider lead in new states that are burgeoning blue, for example, Arizona. But despite that, we see a closer race in those states. We see some polls anyway that are actually tightening since, of course, the Republican convention and since Donald Trump has gone back on the road and is targeting certain states for his rallies. So where do we stand today? The averages of the averages indicate that at this point in time, Biden has a clear path to over 280 electoral votes. Charlie Cook just adding Arizona into the leaning Democratic column. Meanwhile, kind of downgrading a state like Nevada from definitely Democrat to leaning Democrat. Donald Trump at about 105 electoral votes. Now, normally, that's where Republicans are at. The Democrats do have a tip in favor of them normally in the Electoral College. But again, these states are just way too close to call at this point in time. The race is competitive. Where do we stand? Clearly, and no surprise, Biden is focusing his efforts on the Democratic base and where he believes that suburban women are and moderate Republicans are. And that is a focus on the president's failure. That's how 69% of voters see it, in handling the coronavirus. 69% disapprove. Focusing on, given all of the natural disasters, the wildfires, the hurricanes, the federal response, Donald Trump handling of California officials in a recent meeting there, focusing on science, and in fact going so far as to call the president a climate arsonist, which is a pretty strong term to use. And thirdly, of course, focusing on Black Lives Matter and the support for equal justice in a bid to close his support, widen and then close his support strong among growing number of Black voters and hopefully a large turnout of Black voters and liberal progressive voters. What about the president? President is focusing on law and order because it appeared to work for him during the Republican convention. And so you see him holding rallies. His rallies are not just simply gatherings of large groups, but they're a statement. They're a statement that is anti-elite. We don't need your science. We don't need elitists to tell us when we can reopen the economy. We stand for freedom. And then to suggest to voters, hey, before this sucker punch of the coronavirus, there was tremendous growth, unprecedented in the president's terms, although a bit of an exaggeration, unprecedented growth in the national economy. And so far, that's where we stand. Biden leading, but don't place your bets just quite yet. What did I say that appealed or did not appeal to you, Jer?
Well, it's not an issue of whether it appealed or didn't appeal. It was quite comprehensive. But in listening to it and taking all of that and boiling that down to its essence, how I interpret it is we're at the same place we were back in 2016 leading up to November. The lead looks like it's in the hands of the Democrats. It's theirs to lose. But we know from 2016, it could very well lose. The other thing is that and polling does a great job at capturing the trends that are emerging. But there are trends that I think polling can't right away capture or zero in on emerging trends that take a little while. And I think we'll be able to capture those in the following weeks. But in particular, what I'm interested in, and I've only become aware of this phenomenon in the last few weeks, is this movement. And I don't know, when I say movement, I don't want to give people the indication that this is like a million man march or anything, because I'm trying to find numbers. But what I'm talking about is hashtag walk away. Look that up on, YouTube, Google, whatever search that you want to look into. But there is a and I'm going to say quote unquote movement, because I don't know how big it is, called hashtag walk away. And it's about people who were Democrats. And if we can use the current terminology, quote unquote woke, just in a different context, these are Democrats who, have awakened and realized we're no longer with the Democratic Party, because they don't benefit us. They don't benefit our base. We're going either independent or we're going in the Trump camp. And so what I'm looking for right now is that gaining any ground? Again, we don't have to talk about millions and millions of voters. We can really talk about maybe tens of thousands, hundreds of thousands of voters in the key districts and the key states that can have just enough of a tipping point to either make it go in the favor of Trump and or redefine how people see both parties. So I'm looking for that, and I'm trying to get a sense of whether that is exploding or burgeoning, or is it just kind of flatlined? The other thing that I would throw into the mix of this discussion is, of course, the different key cohorts or subgroups. The youth vote in general. Last week, mm-hmm. we talked about the Black vote. We talked about how our poll showed 18 to 24-year-olds in particular, mm-hmm. who had, it was 38% said that they would vote for Trump. 33% of 18 to 29-year-olds. Now, we have a Forbes poll that we mm-hmm. just finished yesterday, and we can't get into the results because Forbes hasn't released it yet, but this is something that we're going to be sharing through our newswire, through our email blast, the results of that latest one. Remember, the last one we did for Forbes of the 18 to 29-year-old vote was back in June, so it'll be interesting to see how it has trended. But make no bones about it, there is a core base of millennials, younger millennials, and Generation Z who, as of today, would vote for Trump. Mm-hmm. And so you put it all together, what you've said and what I've said, and I think it's safe to say that even though the average of the polls show Biden ahead by about 4 or 5, we know from just the last cycle that anything can happen between now and November, the October surprise, and all of these other little currents and trends that are happening that maybe polling can't detect right away, but will in a few weeks. You put it all together, and it's too close to call. My advice to listeners is don't get your hopes up. If you have a favorite, right, whatever side you're on, do not fall for the arrogance that we witnessed last time around, that it is so certain either candidate is going to win. We don't know.
Yeah, I'm glad you raised that. This is a very intriguing result. We did talk about it last week, and to underscore it now with the new Forbes poll of 18 to 29-year-olds, which you'll find on our website, probably Monday or Tuesday, in great detail, or the Forbes website, I should say, too. This phenomenon of young Blacks, in particular young Black men, as many as you point out, is one-third supporting Donald Trump. Overall, double-digit support, substantial double-digit support for Trump among this cohort. It's an anomaly. It's something that needs to be probed more deeply. That's the sort of thing you do with focus groups, I think, more than a poll. But it is, in some ways, it sounds like a rejection of Democratic elitism. It sounds like a sense that they may feel that the Democratic Party has taken advantage of Blacks and Black voters for years. It could be a rising independence among this group. I mean, they still support Black Lives Matter, but are just simply not willing to align themselves with the tradition of older leadership and middle-aged leadership among Black Americans. Whatever it is, these numbers hold up. They not only have serious implications for Democrats this cycle in 2020, but long-range implications, because Blacks have been the key, one of the the four pillars of strong support for the Democratic Party, and you're starting to see young Black men moving away in substantial numbers. That could be a chink in the armor here.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and I think what contributes to that, and actually I believe what is largely responsible for that is media consumption. And mm-hmm. millennials just don't jive with top-down information. And what I mean by that is the network news is completely top down. There are basically memos for whether it's White House correspondents or journalists who work for networks, daily memos that suggest these are the talking points of the day, and what is not listed here, you don't cover. And so there is, you could say, a packaged agenda. And the mainstream media, whether it's, you know, from Fox News or whether it's all the way to the left on CNN, just won't go into depth and details of certain phenomenon that you will get on the internet. Now, we could get into the whole debate of fake news and conspiracy theories, but I don't want to go down that road. What I want to state is a mere fact that those millennials, and this is and myself included, being on the older end, older range of millennials, you know, I'm 37, the oldest millennials are 40. YouTube, I was introduced to YouTube, funny enough, by a 14-year-old when I was doing my teaching internship at the age of 23. A 14-year-old said, you know, Mr. Zogby, you got to check this out. And he wrote down YouTube.com, and I went there. And honestly, you know, a 14-year-old changed my life. I mean, of course, I would have, come across that one way or another because it was exploding at that time. But these platforms where anybody and everybody have a voice, and it's completely horizontal, it's grassroots, it's not top down, people get lost in this stuff and people search. And of course, there are those who probably are a little bit lazier and just gravitate towards a personality or two. And then there are those who keep going down the so-called rabbit hole and searching and searching and searching for the truth. Regardless, the biggest point here is that there's so much to explore on these kind of platforms like YouTube that you just don't get in the mainstream media. Now, of course, that is changing because there is, you know, censorship. There are certain voices that are being kicked off, but still, by and large, the information that you can find on a platform like YouTube just doesn't even pale in comparison to the usual of what you get in the network news and mainstream media. And that is a major factor in why millennials, I think, are... We're seeing in particular Black millennials are breaking away from what was traditional in terms of party politics and perception.
There's something going on. Something going on. We've got time for one issue. And let me set the table. I want to talk about vaccines and vaccination. And I want to just set the table by saying that as a aging boomer, born in the late 1940s, I remember going to grade school during the polio epidemic. And I remember everyone in our small Catholic school, every class had someone who walked with a heavy leg brace. And you could hear the clank, clank, clank as they walked down the hall. They were polio victims. And Dr. Jonas Salk and his team had come up with the vaccine. Tens of millions of us, it was standard. You know, Catholic school, you were baptized, you were vaccinated. No questions asked, and it was a lifesaver. And now we find consistently in our polls, University of Texas, right? And now this new one in particular that we've done for Forbes, this growing number of people, young people in particular, who say, I'm not going to get vaccinated, or when asked, I'm not going to allow my children to be vaccinated, either period or if the coronavirus vaccine, when that comes out, or if they say they are going to be vaccinated, they're not going to be first in line. They're going to wait a while to see how it plays out. Jer, what's going on there?
Well, it's, again, it goes back to a top-down stream of news versus a bottom-up, where in the top-down format, if it doesn't fit the agenda of the day, it's not listened to. You know, some of the biggest, I guess you could say, critics of modern vaccines. Who are they? You know, can we name? I mean, maybe we can name an individual or two, but let's ask ourselves: do we hear these people? Do we see them? You know, on NBC, CBS, ABC, CNN. And when we do see them, how are they portrayed? Are they portrayed as lunatics? Are they portrayed as conspiracy theorists? And so I think that when I listen to conversation, put my you know, ear to the ground, the pulse to what's going on, I hear a growing dissatisfaction, particularly among the young voters, of labeling. You know, news, mainstream news, is when you really think about it, tends to slander whatever the opposing view is, name call and label. And you know, whatever happened to the journalist that hid their biases? You don't have that anymore. You have activists, you don't have journalists, you have people literally on the television shouting at you, telling you how to think, and that those other people are so and so, they're this and they're that. And really, what more and more young people are coming to find is when they go online, they'll listen to another side. And, you know, maybe the other side is name calling too, but the point is that people are getting other information and they're trying to reconcile it. You know, the eighth issue of the Intelligencer opened up with a sentence that said there's an emerging ethos that goes something like this: I just don't know what to believe anymore. And so there are a lot of people who are confused, but at the same time, there are a lot of those who are discovering, hey, there's a whole new side to so-called science. Science is debatable. Science, there are a multiplicity of viewpoints. And I think that there's a large percentage, particularly among the young, that are skeptical about science that is dogmatic. Science that is something like the Catholic Church in the 17th and 16th century that would put you on house arrest if you didn't toe the line.
So you're not saying science is not to be trusted. You are suggesting that if there is a minority point of view that's legitimate, it needs to be as part of an honest debate.
I absolutely, because if our tenet, we have to ask ourselves, what's the main tenet of this society? Is it that we have free and open discussion, or that we have forced opinion, or that we have very limited narrow opinion? I mean, you know, we in our constitution or in our constitutional heritage, there is the protection of minority rights. And the fear of the tyranny of the majority, that doesn't just work out in terms of demographics, such as, you know, whites versus blacks, the Republicans versus Democrats, conservatives versus liberals. It's also in the realm of ideas. And, you know, if you point to the fact that 60 or 70 or 80% of scientists agree on, you know, X, that doesn't mean that the 20, 30, 40% who don't are necessarily crackpots. What I would like to see is the removing of labels from both sides, from independent, from mainstream, from conservative, from liberal, whatever. When we engage in debate, let's not name call. Let's argue passionately, but let's listen and let's try to find holes in the other side. That's really what a free society and a democracy is supposed to be about.
I get it. Okay. I would just ask, you know, for understanding that there are those of us who still hear that clankety clankety clank, and the stakes being so high. This is our first major epidemic in more than a half a century. And we do remember what vaccinations meant back then. And I think we've aired out our views. And thank you. I mean, thank you for that very special insight on where young people are. I think you're accurate, incidentally. And so until next week, have a good week and know that next Friday we'll be back.
Absolutely. I look forward to it. Take care, everyone.